League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And with the international break in full swing, we are taking a deep dive into Gareth Southgate and England's plans for world domination in 2022 and beyond. The Three Lions have avoided any last-minute nerves and they've secured their place in Qatar next year. But despite the tournament still being a long way off, the road to Qatar begins now. Southgate's side came within a penalty shootout. Sorry, England fans, to remind you, penalty shootout was the difference between England and clinching a first European title last summer, and Southgate is wanting to keep that momentum going. But as any manager will tell you, the key to success is do not rest on your laurels. And as we know, Southgate cannot buy while they're strong because there is no transfer market. So solidity, consistency and loyalty were the key watchwords for Southgate at Euro 2020, but he faces a string of selection choices in the months ahead as his current options are absolutely bursting at the seams as he tries to whittle it down to a squad of 23 players. Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips were the mainstays of his side at Euro 2020, but it seems that every week a bright, brand new English midfielder is emerging within the Premier League. So, with that in mind, on today's podcast, we will be delving into England's midfield options and asking, what will England's midfield look like in 2020 and beyond? Right then, my name's Fergal Brennan, and we've assembled a crack team to look at Southgate's options, including the midfield playmaker enthusiast himself, probably the most qualified person to have on the podcast, Squawker's chief football writer, Mohamed Butt. Mo, how are you doing?
I mean, I don't know if I'm most qualified. We could have Xavi on here, but you know, I'm pretty happy. Yeah.
He's busy though now.
Well, now he is. Yeah, no, I'm pretty happy to be here. Looking forward to discussing England.
That is the official line on it. And alongside Mo from our Euro 2020 coverage, we have Arsenal FC correspondent for Football London, Kaya Kainak. Kaya, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. Thank you very much for having me back on. I'm looking forward to talking about midfield options. There's not that many going on at Arsenal, so hopefully we can talk about some good ones at England.
Indeed. There's a huge list of them. We're going to do our best to fit as many of them in as possible in the podcast. But before we get into the future, I just want to take a very quick step back in the past, Mo. We're going to focus on what are the options for Southgate moving forward. But Euro 2020, by and large, was a success for England. They got themselves all the way to the final. Obviously, as you mentioned in the intro, penalty shootout defeat against Italy was what ultimately scuppered it. But one of the big features of Southgate was that he didn't make an enormous amount of changes during Euro 2020. Looking back through the matches, Declan Rice, Calvin Phillips, they started every single game right the way through the group stages. There was really limited changes, only really Bukayo Saka and Jack Grealish that made a kind of telling impact on Southgate's starting team. And looking into the qualifiers for the 2022 World Cup, by and large, Phillips and Rice have kept those positions. Declan Rice has started every game other than Andorra, and other than Andorra, Calvin Phillips has only missed one. So looking at Southgate's kind of attitude and the way that he looks to play things, he might look at this and go, if it ain't broke, don't try and fix it, because so far things are ticking on relatively solidly.
Is it fixed though? I mean, it isn't. I mean, I don't know, broke. It's not kind of broken. Obviously England are a good team, but at the same time, it's like you're playing the very fine margins, and he has done his whole career as England. I mean, you know, Southgate, before we rip into shreds in this whole podcast, which I'm going to, unfortunately, I must say I'm full of praise. I love Southgate as a person. I think as a figurehead for the English FA, he's done wonders to detoxify and bring the country and the team and the nation forward into the modern era. He's genuinely everything you'd want in a figurehead. And if he's not England manager, I'd love him to be chairman of the FA or have just a genuinely important role. I think he's a great person. I think he's a great man. And I really respect him. However, as a manager, he's a complete coward. And he, as a manager, we didn't notice it necessarily, let's say, at the World Cup, 2018 World Cup, because it was so, oh my God, England are winning games, want to shoot out, what the hell is going on? No one really noticed it. And also, frankly, because at the World Cup, he was a bit bold in his celebrations. He had a midfield three, Jordan Henderson, Jesse Lingard, Dele Alli. That's ridiculously open. I mean, he played a back three behind them to cover for it. But he was so bold in his selections at the World Cup. And it was like, okay, here we go. Fast forward to Euro 2020, a bit more expectations on him now. Jesse Lingard's not playing as well. Dele Alli certainly is not playing as well. And Jordan Henderson isn't as physically robust as he was. So he adjusts, right? And he brings in Declan Rice, who is emerging. Okay, cool. Calvin Phillips, who is just fantastic. Okay, cool. Plays them together. All right, fine, whatever. And it works to the extent that England don't concede very many chances, don't concede very many goals, and they get all the way to the final. But they got all the way to the final with, how can we put this? Easy draw? Not an easy draw, but a gentle draw compared to what they could have had. They didn't really face anyone great until the final itself. They faced a Denmark team, I suppose in the semi-finals, who had completely run out of steam. Like, you could see that they'd given everything to get as far as they'd done, and they'd run out of steam. And England did well to sort of nullify them. And the midfield double pivot, it worked well, and it was, you know, okay, fine. But when you're playing the fine margins, you know, you have to then, it becomes a problem. And so England, in the final, literally in the final, Harry Kane, Raheem Sterling, Mason Mount with the front three. Not a single shot on goal between the three of them. Harry Kane barely touched the ball inside the Italian half, right? So then when your attackers aren't producing, then your midfield has to step up and help you. But the midfield is purely negative, purely designed to shut down the opponent. So everyone in the England team is shutting down Italy, who's actually attacking, you know? There's not enough attacking impetus, except from like Luke Shaw. That's not enough, right? So it wasn't broken, because obviously England got quite far and they could have won the final with a bit more luck or whatever. But it's clearly not working in the sense that where you can see a sustainable pattern that England can repeat for years and years. And years. Like, look at the France midfield that won the World Cup. That is a sustainable pattern. You know, then that's not a midfield that's going to give you 38 games at a club level. But for 7, 8, 9 games in the summer to win a tournament, Pogba, Kante, you know, a third guy to be the runner. That works. It's sustainable. You see how it works. You see the attacking part of the team and the defensive part of the team in that midfield. Right, you look at Spain's midfield, the best midfield in international football. Busquets, Pedri, Koke, and then all Gavi comes in for Pedri. You can see how it works. You've got passing midfield at the base. You've got pressers who can press. You keep the ball. You rotate the ball. You dominate games. You know, Italy's midfield, same thing. You can see the repeatable patterns for success, both offensively and defensively, in all these other great teams. In England, all you see is a defensive team. There's no attacking threat in that midfield at all, and that's a problem.
Kai, we're going to talk about individuals in a second and who could potentially force their way in and what role that they might have to play. But this system's point is relevant in terms of England. Euro 2020, it was this idea of a double pivot, Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips, safety first, ensure that, you know, there was clean sheets were kept. And that was one of the big narratives surrounding England, that they didn't concede that many goals at Euro 2020. And the double pivot was essentially justified in that sense. But when you look at the best club teams in the Premier League and in European football, and you look at the best international teams, and I include Euro 2020 at this, they don't play like that. Italy, Spain, Croatia, single pivot, Jorginho, Busquets, Brozovic. You know, you transfer that into the Premier League, you've got Fabinho, Rodri, Jorginho again at Chelsea. These are managers, clubs, teams where they trust one individual to say, your skill set, your ability, you're fine on your own. So we'll either play with two front foot eights that will look to go and impact the game in an attacking sense, or as Mo said in the example of Spain with Pedri and Koke, two pressers that will look to turn over possession and then look to build into attack. We've kind of talked about Southgate being a bit of a custard cream type character, but if he is going to move with the times and develop with the way that the ball is kind of rolling, does he have to go with a single pivot in order to not let England get overloaded by better midfields moving forward?
I don't necessarily think so. I'm wary that I'm going to incur some sort of scorn from maybe Mo, maybe yourself, but I don't think necessarily that playing a double pivot and playing a slightly more defensive style at international level is actually a bad thing. I think international football is so different from club football in that the only thing that really matters at international level is results. Obviously, teams need to have a playing style, and it's great to see England playing well and attacking football. We all want to be entertained when we watched England, but if England had won that penalty shootout against Italy, I don't think any of us would have really had any problems with the fact that England did play defensive football throughout
the entire tournament.
And I think if you look at those, well, they still would have won. People still would have been celebrating, and that's all anyone would have remembered, though. So I think We can talk about those midfields that you guys are mentioning before, Croatia, Spain, Belgium, France, whoever. They, I think, and we'll come on to individuals a bit more, but I think if England try to go toe-to-toe with them in the midfield battle, I think they'll lose. So I don't necessarily think at this moment in time, and I don't think by next winter, I was about to say next summer, but I forget the World Cup's in Qatar, next winter, that England will have a midfield good enough to compete with them in terms of possession, in terms of pressing, and in terms of, I guess, quality at the main thrust of it. So I think I'm personally fine with the idea of a double pivot that is a little bit more defensive and a little bit more defensively solid, just because A, the midfield isn't strong enough, I don't think, and also B, I don't think there's centre-backs behind them who are strong enough to make up for if you try and play a slightly more attacking style of football. So I think Southgate obviously is very cautious, and I think people are very fair to criticise him for that, and I think that's just a complete difference of opinion, that's fine. But personally, I think at international level, and particularly at tournaments, a safety-first approach isn't always the worst thing in the world.
Let's talk about your pal Declan Rice, Mo, because with in terms of England, he's kind of mooted as this first-choice pick, first name on the team sheet, natural holding midfielder, etc., etc. And when you look at some of his key numbers and his key data so far this season, West Ham have been excellent and he's been brilliant right within the middle of that. Only him and Joao Cancelo have nailed the defensive stats. 10-plus clearances, tackles, interceptions, aerial duels, all of these big things that you associate with someone that plays as a six. But perception would tell you that he's an absolute dominant machine of a holding midfielder. But when you look at how West Ham actually play, there's only been one game this season where he's played on his own as a six. 90% of the games he's played so far this season, he's had Thomas Suchek alongside him. And Thomas Suchek's one of those perfect players that almost kind of breezes by. You don't necessarily notice that he's there, but you speak to West Ham fans and they love him. So we talk about Declan Rice just constantly, that he can play it on his own. Should he be playing it on his own? The stats are there to say that he can, but on the pitch for West Ham, he doesn't. So is it fair to throw him into that type of a situation for England where the numbers suggest that he can do it, but he's actually not got that much practical experience without having his hand being held by Suchek?
Yeah, look, I mean, I love Declan Rice. I think he's brilliant. I think Declan Rice is absolutely, you know, a wonderful midfielder. He's really evolved this season. He's the way he impacts defensively for West Ham is incredible. The way he drives forward with the ball in the Europa League, we've seen it. He's really, really bold. He's a fantastic leader. He's a real emerging presence. You can see why Southgate trusts him so much. And I think a great example of what Declan Rice brings is the Germany game, the win over Germany. Because I remember saying before the game on this podcast that Goretzka might just end up bench pressing him, you know? And it was funny. And then the first 5 minutes, Goretzka just ran by him like three times, and thinking, oh, this is going to be an ugly afternoon. And Rice got an early booking as well. But he carried on playing and he got better and better. And he dominated that game, and he dominated Goretzka and shut him down for the rest of the game without really doing too much to worry about getting a second yellow. I think that is a great example of how good Declan Rice is. But again, and it's like you said, it's stylistics, right? He doesn't play. He plays in double pivot. It's the same thing with Kante. Kante is a great example of this as well, because Kante doesn't really play in a three. Hasn't really played at his best in a three. And what Kante does best, the way Kante plays football, is kind of nullified by playing at the base in a three. And it can sort of work playing as a central midfielder in a three, right? He's better there than he is at the base in a three. But really, ideally, you want to play him in a two, which is why it's weird that the way France play, even though they play a midfield three, the third midfielder usually just sort of plays as a winger almost, which makes it Kante and Pogba as a two, which gets the best out of Kante. Now, West Ham obviously play with Suchek and Rice. Rice is great in that role because, you know, he just has, he's the two of them. If he goes, Suchek holds. If Suchek goes, he holds, and it works, right? With England, it's the same thing with Phillips, but Phillips is a defensive midfielder, more so even than Rice, I think, in the terms that if you look at Phillips, the way he plays at Leeds, he holds, he plays by himself, he distributes the ball. He's the, you know, he's the closest thing England have to someone like Busquets, someone like Xabi Alonso, that kind of midfielder, right? He can do that role. Is he as good as Rice? No, he's not, right? He's not as good as Declan Rice. But, you know, you play him anyway because he's obviously brilliant at what he does. But this is the stylistic crux at the heart of England's midfield. The problem, right, is that you've got two guys who are both really good, both worthy starters. One of them can play single pivot. One of them can't play single pivot. So it's like, which formation do you go with? Do you go with a 4-3-3? But that would be you need to then work with Rice to sort of become a central midfielder. I mean, he could do it. Don't get me wrong. I think he could do it. If you look at Crystal Palace, is a great example. Skip ahead a little bit. They have Chika Kuyate at the base. They have James McArthur and Conor Gallagher as central midfielders in a 4-3-3. James McArthur and Conor Gallagher are not the same kind of midfielder. McArthur is a presser. He's a tackler. He moves, gets the ball and moves it on neatly. Conor Gallagher is very expressive, very expansive, goes forward with the ball, carries the ball, shoots, passes, assists, goals, right? So, and yet that works as a three with Kuyate at the base. So, you know, you look at that and you could conceivably, in my mind, see a midfield where Calvin Phillips sits, Declan Rice is more of a free, like a McArthur type, a presser, wins the ball, gets it forward, makes runs off the ball. And then you have a third midfielder who is a bit more of attacking, a bit more creative, spontaneous, that sort of thing. Could that be Jack Grealish in time? I don't know, you know. Emile Smith-Rowe, we'll mention some of these names later, but the thing is, that kind of midfield would require, there's a degree of risk required in playing like that. The safest thing is you take the best midfielder for a 4-3-3, your best midfielder for a 4-2-3-1, you play them together in a 4-2-3-1, and then it's the safest midfielder. I don't think necessarily, by the way, that England have to play expansive, open, wonderful football. I mean, they should do. I think everyone should play that way. But, you know, you can play defensive football and win tournaments, but you have to have some sense of attacking potential in your team. And England's front three is far too focused on pressing to then not have a midfield that also doesn't attack at all. You know, if you took Mount out of that team, Mount and Saka out of the team for, let's say, Grealish and Rashford, then okay, fine, you can have Rice and Phillips as your pick. But when you've got Sterling, Kane, Mount, Saka, and then Rice and Phillips, there's not enough goals or goal threat in that team, and yeah, that's the problem I feel England are going to run into. I love Declan Rice. I think he's great, but he can't play in a single pivot by himself. And if he has the ability, it's going to take more than, you can't just chuck him in there for one summer tournament. He needs to work at that an entire season with his manager, and Moyes is never going to play that role. So it's not going to happen. He's not going to learn it. The clubs he's linked with don't play that way. He's going to go Man United. He's going to go Chelsea. None of those clubs play with a single pivot. Not really. So he's not going to learn this role, you know? So it's always going to be a problem. Double pivot, single pivot. I don't know.
Before we move on from the kind of idea of either a single or a double pivot and maybe kind of branch it out into like a flatter three or a differently structured midfield, I do want to ask about Calvin Phillips, Kaya, because he does kind of get pushed to the back of this conversation. When we talk about Leeds, the system that he plays, they play a relatively straightforward 4-1-4-1, where he is given license by Marcelo Bielsa to be that guy. And you look at some of the data relating to how he's done for Leeds so far this season. Of all the English midfielders, or all the probably eligible to be called up by Southgate for the World Cup, he's got the highest average touches in his own half. He's got the highest average received passes from centre-backs. And he's got the highest average progressive passes from his own half into the opposition half. When you think of the best number sixes in the world, Busquets, Brozovic, Jorginho, those are the qualities that we associate with them. And yet, all the talk is about Declan Rice, but the cold hard numbers point to Calvin Phillips.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. I would argue that there's a definite debate to be had over whether Calvin Phillips in this England side is maybe even more important than Declan Rice just because of what he offers in those sort of stats that you were mentioning there. I think if England do want to play that 4-3-3, I think Mo's exactly right. I don't think Declan Rice is the guy who can be that sole pivot on his own. And I think that also takes away a lot of his game if you make him play there. I think Declan Rice has shown this season in particular that he's someone who is able to dribble forward and he's a box-to-box player as much as he is someone who's a bit of a sitter. So I think if you're going to play 4-3-3, Calvin Phillips is your guy to be the sole pivot. I have my reservations over the wisdom of doing that, because I think what you end up doing is putting so many of these England players who are great in midfield, you end up putting them sort of square pegs into round holes kind of thing. And I'm just not sure it 100% works in terms of Phillips, Rice, and then one other in a midfield three.
Player 4-3-3, Calvin Phillips single pivot, the whole team needs to play it. It's not just the midfield that needs to play it, right? The whole team needs to get involved. So with Leeds, right, like Declan Rice, for instance, has got like far greater, he's got 2.3 interceptions, I think, or something there or thereabouts this season per 90 minutes, whereas Calvin Phillips is way, way down on that because Rice plays a different style of football completely. Leeds play all cohesive, attacking. There's very little space between their lines. They all press. It's a really aggressive style of play. You can afford to do that. Barcelona, single pivot, very legendary. But it's a specific pass-heavy style of play. Real Madrid, single pivot. So, it's pass-heavy. They use the wings for pace. It's, you know, you have to dominate the ball and try to dominate the ball in every game. Gareth Southgate obviously doesn't like playing like that in big games. He likes to play on the break, sit deep, play on the break. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's absolutely fine. But then Calvin Phillips, a lot of what Calvin Phillips does, which is tackle, press, and recycle the ball, like you said, fantastically, very quickly, you're nullifying a lot of what he does if you play a defensive style of football. Right? He's in there right now because, like you said, he can tackle, he can pass, and he's excellent at it, and he's very good at delivering the ball forward quickly. But we're not seeing the best of what he can do because it's a double pivot system. And you could argue, and it seems to me likely, that he's only kind of in the team. He got his way into the team because Henderson had injury problems. And him and Henderson offers a similar thing, a double pivot, getting the ball forward very quickly, tough tackler. You know, it's a very similar kind of player. Henderson, I wouldn't play Henderson as a pivot by himself, as we've seen with Liverpool before. That's really makes them very open, right? But Phillips can play as a pivot by himself. But I think he's almost in the team now because he's too good to take out of the team, obviously. But at the same time, you're never going to see the best of him because in a 4-2-3-1, you can't really. You don't see him get to flex his total muscles. Maybe he could if the rest of the team was more attacking. But again, it's not just the system, right? We need to focus on the way the system is deployed. You can play a 4-2-3-1 and be attacking. You know, you can play a 4-2-3-1 and go for it and be attacking and be interesting. England's 4-2-3-1 is primarily defensive. And that's fine as well, but that means that your midfield has to be set up in a certain way, and you maybe want them to have a bit more energy and dynamism. I think Declan Rice is perfect for a 4-2-3-1, for instance. I think that's why he does so well for England, why he looks so good. Phillips looks good too, but in a different way, right? And it's not quite the same. So, if England want to play a 4-2-3-1 and have a bit more attacking impetus, I would look to maybe have someone a bit more about them in attacking areas next to Rice so that the two can trade off, and we'll see what happens there.
Let's move this on in terms of what Southgate could do, because double pivot, single pivot, the numbers are kind of restricted to maybe just 2, 3, 4 names. But when you open that up, and if you want to go maybe to mirror Spain, where they have Busquets as a, what I'd say, a kind of shallow six with two tight head eights of Pedri and Koke next to him, there's lots of different variations. And when you do throw the floor open, this is where it gets really, really interesting, because those other roles, whether it's two, whether it's one, Southgate's got a huge amount of options. Phil Foden, Emile Smith-Rowe, Curtis Jones, Mason Mount, Conor Gallagher, Jude Bellingham. There's a huge amount of names. So I just want to kind of break them down. Emile Smith-Rowe, obviously, Kaya, I'm going to leave you to tuck into him because I wouldn't dare take it away from you. But I'm going to ask you about Mason Mount, Mo, because during the summer, he was a key part of this. And the point that you made, this idea that England's front four is very press orientated, he was a huge part of that. But inevitably, that leaves gaps then in behind. And Mason Mount, again, there's a bit of misconception with him sometimes. And you look at his data based on so far this season, most chances created in that Chelsea team, most tackles made and most shots. He is very, very versatile. We tend to just think that for England, because he played up high and close in behind Kane, that he's a bit one-dimensional. Whichever way England are going to do this, and however Southgate wants to play it, an ability to be tactically versatile and Southgate to maybe say from game to game, listen, I need you to tweak your role and it can't be a big thing. Mason Mount has demonstrated with Chelsea that he's got the ability to do that.
With England too. Mason Mount is fantastic. Many times you look at the way he pops up with goals, he's willing to take a shot on and that stuff. But tactically versatile with England. He, for the most part, he was playing one kind of role in the final of Euro 2020 against Italy. Italy, when they're in possession, Italy shifted into a back three with Di Lorenzo coming narrow to form a back three with Chiellini and Bonucci. And they would send their left back, previously Spinazzola, now in the final was Emerson, forward to basically play as a winger. And then that meant Insigne could cut inside and then involve himself with the striker more closely. And that their whole system functioned basically off that one tactical shift. And what Southgate did was he placed Mount very high and very wide on the left and just said, look, make sure that Di Lorenzo can't cut inside. And it did, and it worked. And Italy were rubbish in that first half of that game because they couldn't cut inside. They couldn't make their shift. And, England were chucking long balls to midfield. So Chiellini is running 20 yards to try and win a header. By the time he gets 20 yards, he's exhausted. Harry Kane's winning all the headers. It was a brilliant tactical gambit. It just missed out the one thing, which is you need to have shots on goal to win games. And England had like one or two, and then that was it. And they didn't try enough attacking impetus when they had the advantage. They didn't try and push it home, because they were happy. They got the early goal. It was like, right, cool, let's sit on this. They should have gone for it. Because once Italy adjusted second half and just stopped trying to make that shift and just played Di Lorenzo like a normal fullback, it completely wrecked what he was. But Mount is really good. And Mount showed that first half he sacrificed himself and really did the right tactical job. And I love Mason Mount. I think he's brilliant. I think he's England's Thomas Muller. which I think puts him in interesting, gives him a lot of pros, but a lot of cons as well, in the sense that he's not the primary playmaker. He's never going to be the primary playmaker of a team, right? If you played him 4-3-3 and you played him as the third midfielder, that's not going to be what you want. You want someone with a bit more impetus and protagonism in that. What Mount is the greatest link man England have got, probably. He'll make runs off the ball. He'll make runs into space. When a playmaker has the ball, Mount is always where the playmaker needs him to be. Whether that's making a run in behind, whether that's standing deep for a 1-2, whatever it is, Mount is there. And he does the right thing. He nearly always makes the right decision. Him and Grealish, the way they dovetailed, and Shaw as well. Those three were some of the only really good moments of, oh, wow, great football that England actually produced all tournament long. Those three, because Grealish is a supreme playmaker, right? Grealish is the ultimate on-ball playmaker that England have. So for him, Mount, who is not an on-ball player, but is a great facilitator, was fantastic. As a fantastic little foil, running off him, making little complimentary runs, being in the right place for him to pass and score goals and everything. And that's really what Mount does. And that's why he's such an interesting thing, because Southgate loves him and Tuchel likes him. But Southgate and Lampard both adored him because they were more conservative coaches. And he fits into that perfectly because he will work his backside off. He'll defend like a lion, and then he can break forward and attack with intelligence, real intelligence as well. And he loves a shot. He loves a shot. That's the other thing as well. He loves to shoot. He's happy to take a shot on. He's confident to take a shot on. And that's not all. That's a valuable trait to have in midfielder. So I love Mason Mount. I just feel like to really get the best out of him, you need to pair him with Jack Grealish or someone like that. You know, someone who's an equally dominant playmaker, like that needs someone running off the ball to make space for him. Then you'll see the best of him. As is, I mean, I wouldn't play him as the chief and the playmaker myself.
If England are going to be progressive in terms of midfield play, Kaya, they need someone that's going to create chances. And so far in the Premier League this season, there's only been one man who's created the most chances, the darling of the Emirates, Smith Rowe. Fantastic season. Mikel Arteta has told him to throw away the dairy milk, keep off the pizzas, and he's absolutely flying on the back of it. The slight concern with him in terms of this discussion that we're having in terms of systems and midfield structure, he's only played one game in what you'd class as a central position for Arsenal, but he's still really, really early days. But just raw, natural ability, fearlessness, getting the ball and running at people. As an Arsenal fan, he almost reminds me of Pires, this idea that whenever he gets the ball, it always kind of seems behind him and he kind of just drags it under and then just gallops and gallops and gallops away. And he doesn't look really quick, but he's quick enough. He doesn't look really strong, but he can hold people off. I don't know how he does it, but he just gets through these challenges. And as Mo said, if England want to implement themselves on games, and if they're going to have a really press-heavy attack, then someone does need to be carrying the ball from midfield, but not just in a water carrier way. There needs to be a creative edge to it. Smith Rowe has shown that this season. It might be a bit of a bridge for him to completely force his way in, but if his arc of development continues, he is going
to
be...
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
In the conversation.
For sure. I think there's not that many England midfielders this season who are offering as many goals in terms of a goal threat as Emile Smith Rowe. I think he's got more than any others in the squad. So for me, what he does really well is progressing the ball by dribbling rather than necessarily by passing, which may be what you might be looking for from a sort of a midfielder if you're looking for him in a three. That's why personally, and Lee Carsley said this as well when he had him in the under-21s for England, it's better to get a player like Smith Rowe closer to the opposition goal in sort of a position maybe on the left wing, right wing, less so, but I think left wing is where he's at his best, just because that's where he can cause a lot of problems. And you said Pires is the comparison there. I totally agree with that. I think that's something he does in this Arsenal side. And Arteta recently has found a winning formula with him on the left with either Nuno Tavares or Kieran Tierney overlapping. I think England with Shaw or Chilwell could do something very similar. The only question then is, who are you dropping to have Emile Smith Rowe on the left wing? Are you going to drop Sterling? Are you going to drop Grealish? Are you going to drop Foden if you play him there? It's difficult to see that happening. So I'm excited to see how Smith Rowe does when he gets his opportunity this time around. You could play him in a 4-3-3, and he's played a bit there for Arsenal this season as sort of the right side of the three. It doesn't work as much just because I personally think he's great as combining with anyone. So if you play him on the right of a 4-3-3, he'll combine with that right winger and they'll work perfectly in tandem, and he'll be able to bring that right winger into the game. But then I think you sacrifice a bit of his ability to just progress that ball forward. If he's coming from a bit deeper, I think he's less of a threat to the opposition, particularly when you're up against low blocks, which England are quite a lot. So I don't see him personally as the best fit for a central midfield option. I think if you want to get the best from someone like Emile Smith-Rowe, you need to have him on the wings, specifically the left wing.
Yeah, I love Smith-Rowe. I think he's great. And I think Southgate obviously showed that with his appreciation of Saka, that as long as you press and work hard, he'll pick you anywhere. I mean, Saka was not the best option on the ball to play those England games, but he defends like so diligently and with such intelligence and rigour that like Southgate's like, no, Bukayo, get in there, help, protect Kyle Walker, he's rubbish. For England, he's rubbish, not for Man City. And Saka did that, so did a great job. And I think Smith-Rowe would do something similar. But yeah, I think basically Smith-Rowe's misfortune is that, like you said, best position for him is left wing. Jack Grealish is ahead of him. Marcus Rashford's ahead of him. Raheem Sterling can also play there ahead of him. And Phil Foden is. So it's too crowded, right? That's his main problem. He's really, really good. I really like him a lot. But unlike the right wing, where the only option, the best option for England is, well, first he wasn't even playing in the Premier League because Southgate wasn't paying attention. Obviously, Southgate doesn't have BT Sport. And then now he's in the Premier League, he's not playing. So, you know, there's an opening there, so Saka was able to burst through. I don't think Smith-Rowe will have the same fortune. But you look at someone more like Conor Gallagher, I think it's almost a better example of what England needs. I think Conor Gallagher carries the ball as well, like Smith-Rowe does. He drives it forward, but he's more of a passer. He plays more in a central role for Palace. And I mentioned it before, but I think he's shown this season like this sort of absurd confidence and ability. Like, he's come from almost nowhere like to play for Palace, and he looks like he's so confident and so sure of himself. And what's more for England, what's suited is that he plays more on the right rather than on the left, which is what Smith-Rowe does.
I've just got to say one thing in defence of Saka and what I think he offers on the right wing, because I know this is not an Arsenal-focused podcast, so I won't bring too much Arsenal content into it, I promise. But what he offers, especially with England playing as defensively as they do, is sort of this sort of escape artist ability to just completely turn away from any sort of press. He did it really well against Germany. I remember that there was one time where he just completely bypassed the German attacker and just, I think it was Kimmich maybe? I'm not 100% sure. It might have been the left-back whose name was just Gosens. And Saka offers that, where I don't necessarily think any other options for England on the right wing do. So if England are going to play a slightly more defensive style of football, someone like Saka on the break just to counter-attack really quickly is perfect for what Gareth Southgate's looking for.
Yeah, that's why he plays. He defends well and then he breaks well. I mean, the famous picture of Chiellini just going, come back here. You know, Saka's great for what Southgate wants. That's why he plays. Good for him.
Mo, I want to ask you about Phil Foden. I want to come back to Conor Gallagher in a second, but Phil Foden kind of fits into maybe this idea that we have about Emile Smith-Rowe about, yes, there's maybe a long-term option of playing him centrally, but in the here and the now, in the next 18 months to 2 years, he's got his best position, which is slightly higher up the pitch. And one of the best statistics to look at in terms of Phil Foden, the middle of the pitch is a bit of a honeycomb in terms of average positions, average touches, average passes given and average passes received, both for England and at club level. Phil Foden really bucks the trend in that sense. Most chances created for Manchester City since the start of this season. But crucially, most passes received and most passes distributed. He's kind of slightly out on his own on the left-hand side. And the passes received one, for me, is the really important one in terms of England. We have this block of players in the middle that like to take the ball there, short, quick, sharp passes. Phil Foden likes to receive the ball in space. He likes to receive the ball a bit higher up on the pitch. There is a bit of an obsession both at Manchester City of the David Silva replacement and where is Phil Foden going to play. In the here and the now and in the short to medium term, that's probably already decided. He knows where he wants the ball. He knows how he likes to receive the ball. So keep him there and give a midfield spot to somebody that wants to play in midfield.
Yeah, this is a very short and sweet answer. I love Phil Foden. Again, I think he is magnificent. He's absolutely electric to watch. Him and Mason Greenwood are the most ridiculous, but I almost can't believe they're English when I watch them play in Sancho. I'm like, are you sure they're English? What the hell's going on here? Foden is outrageous, but he's not a midfielder. Right now, at this point in his career, he's not a midfielder. He's a forward. He plays on the forward line. He is, and this is what I think is so wonderful about him. He is the Leroy Sané replacement that you need, right? But at the same time, he can play false nine. He can play right wing. And he can play central midfield if you need him to. But he is primarily, he's at his best, and we saw it at Anfield, he playing on that left role, inside forward, starting in the half space, then either going very wide or coming in field and scoring goals, making goal threat. he's phenomenal. He's outrageous. He's not a midfielder though. So, I mean, you know, let's discount him for this role. As much as he is absolutely magnificent and should play more for England, if not from the start, then off the bench. I mean, my God, can you imagine bringing him on 70 minutes? You've been running around chasing Grealish or Rashford or whoever it is, Sterling, Saka. And then he comes on 70 minutes. You're like, oh my God, you just want to cry.
Unless you're an England fan, then you definitely don't want to cry.
Tears of joy.
Well, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Well, that's a side point. Kaya, we talked about Emil Smith-Rowe and kind of seizing chances this season. Conor Gallagher also falls into that box because Patrick Vieira's come into Crystal Palace. He's looked to change a lot, implement a new style. Conor Gallagher's been the poster boy for that. He's been front row centre. Obviously, Will Sahar's done brilliantly and smashed records. But Conor Gallagher's, for me, probably been the symbol of what Vieira's trying to do. And one of the most interesting stats that we've dug up about Gallagher is in relation to last season when he was on loan at West Brom. And this season when he's on loan at Crystal Palace. Last season at West Brom, when they were scrapping down the bottom of the table, most tackles won and most fouls won. So he's not afraid to get dirty, stick his foot in, win the ball and get a bit of a kick. Transfer that into this season for Palace. Most shots on target, most goals and assists combined in the team and most chances created. In about 6 to 8 months, he's basically gone, I can do this for you with the baggies and I can do this for you, Mr. Vieira at Palace. Mo's mentioned this point quite a few times, and it is true. Southgate has to rely on these players that against different teams, he's going to have to ask them to do something different. There's no bigger example based on those contrasting stats from Conor Gallagher that he can do one thing, he can do another. And that versatility is massive.
Yeah, 100%. You look at the managers he's played under. Obviously, Big Sam, known for his more defensive style, and then Vieira, you see how quickly he's transformed Palace from being a very defensively solid team under Roy Hodgson to being a team that is now known for playing a bit of football, playing out from the back and playing some nice attacking stuff. The fact that Gallagher is thriving or has thrived in both of those systems, yeah, like you say, shows the versatility that he's got. And I think one of the points Mo made earlier, which was really good, was if you've got that double pivot, if you're going to go for a double pivot, you want players who can get forward and offer some sort of attacking option, particularly if you're going to have a front four who is a bit more, I don't want to say functional, but a bit more focused on pressing than actually, I guess, attacking output. So I think, yeah, Conor Gallagher could offer a lot. He's doing really well in a 4-3-3 this season, which I think is interesting. And it's another reason why I think personally it's a shame that England don't have the players to play a 4-3-3, because I think if he was to come in and do that, he could do it really well. I think, yeah, he's defensively works himself into the ground really hard and also has shown, yeah, an attacking quality, which, I mean, he's kind of like a complete midfielder. I don't want to go too far in praising him, but he's got so much to his game that I'm personally surprised that he didn't quite make the group this time. And I think it's a matter of time before he does start to knock on that England door and bang it down and get in the team. So I think he's got a lot to offer Conor Gallagher. And he came to the Emirates for Crystal Palace and I got to watch him live there in the flesh for sort of the first time. Obviously, I saw him a bit with West Brom last season, but he was absolutely fantastic, not just in terms of what he could do of winning the ball back, but it was how quickly he was able to dribble forward with the ball and have an end product at the end of that. That's not that common with young players. Lots of young players, their decision-making isn't that great. Conor Gallagher's decision-making is fantastic. So I think if he is an option, if you want to put him in any sort of system, a kind of Swiss Army knife type of player, Conor Gallagher can be that. But I don't want to be too... I thought that's kind of damning him with faint praise. If you say he's a Swiss Army knife type player, that means he's not really mastered any sort of particular skill, but he seems like that, I think, because he's got so many strings to his bow.
Yeah, I think, look, if you look at Conor Gallagher, you mentioned West Brom, it's a great example. If you look at Conor Gallagher's heat map for that season, West Brom, it's basically a butterfly. All right, look at it. It's literally, like, he's all over the midfield of the pitch, four huge lumps, like one here, one here, one here, one here. It's ridiculous. He was everywhere. And you look at him now for Palace playing in a more considered role in the actual considered system attacking play, right? Fantastic. I can't be more hyped about Conor Gallagher than that. It's ridiculous because honestly, he plays for Crystal Palace. He's not, he was, like you said, he was a worker at West Brom, but he's so complete in what he does. And I think if you want to play a 4-3, but still be defensively solid, he's almost a dream to put in that role. You know, the fact that he can do everything for Southgate. But I would personally play someone a bit more offensive, but he, to me, is perfect for that role. You could play Calvin Phillips, you could play Conor Gallagher. You just need someone to be James MacArthur, but much, much better, with all due respect to James MacArthur. And, you know, I mean, you could say Declan Rice, but again, he doesn't play in a midfield three, and that is completely... You could teach him, I guess, but, I mean, to me, the best England midfielder to play in a 4-3-3 with Gallagher and with Phillips plays in the Bundesliga. We know that Gareth Southgate doesn't watch the Bundesliga.
Well, that brings me perfectly, neatly set me up there, almost Jude Bellingham-esque for my next question, Mo, because that's who I was going to ask you about. Obviously, there has been this joke during Euro 2020 that Southgate doesn't have BT Sport and he doesn't watch the Bundesliga. Jude Bellingham, I've got two thoughts on Jude Bellingham. One of them is based on numbers, which is, so far this season, you want to talk about midfielders that do a little bit of everything. Box-to-box runs, which is basically classed from the centre circle to the opposition box. Nobody beats him on that. Duels won, individual tackles won. Nobody's better than that in the Champions League. And fouls won, so he does get chopped down quite a bit. That's the hard data. My personal view on him is he is the smoothest footballer in that England team. Smoothness on the ball, receiving the ball, moving with the ball, laying the ball off. Nothing affects this kid. He's absolutely smooth as silk. We're joking about, obviously, the Bundesliga affecting him and impacting him. Southgate, we know, will be considering him. But is he still on the periphery based on maybe a bit of Premier League bias?
Yeah, he is, absolutely. Definitely, 100%. Like, Jadon Sancho is 10 times the player any of those other England-wide players are, and he didn't get a kick for England, or barely got a kick for England at the Euros, right? Because he plays in the Bundesliga. You know, Bellingham is incredible to me. He's absolutely sensational. And, you know, you look at what he does off the ball, the way he works hard defensively, but the way he carries it forward, the way he can score goals, the way he can do a bit of everything. To me, you put Phillips with his distribution powers, right? Conor Gallagher with his little passing, perceptive passing, and his ability to move with the ball as well, dribble with the ball. And you have Bellingham who can dribble, who can score, who can tackle, who is the ultimate sort of box-to-box midfielder. That midfield three would give anyone a game, even though obviously reputationally England have much better players, and Declan Rice individually is probably the best England midfielder right now. I don't know if you could fit him in a 4-3-3 as smoothly as you could fit those three kids, right? Well, Phillips isn't a kid, but you know what I mean, the other two. And I just think, you know, Jude Bellingham to me is sensational, and he's such a massive prospect. And obviously, there's a sense of everyone's like waiting for him to make the next move to after Dortmund, because everyone does leave Dortmund, right? They do their 2-3 years there and then they move on, because that's what Dortmund do. So everyone's like waiting, where's he going to go? And that's a fair point to make. He's not going to move this summer. This summer is Haaland moving. Next summer, maybe that will be Jude Bellingham's time to move, right? And that's going to be interesting to see where does he go. And what I think is sad and frustrating is that maybe he honestly has to wait until he makes that move before he gets into the England team, because not only is Southgate looking primarily at players who play in the Premier League, I think there's also a degree of, at Dortmund, because German football is so open and plays so heavily in transition, which is not something that England, England do, but they don't play in the same sort of way. The teams that England face aren't playing in the same way the teams that Dortmund face. There's not much open play, there's not as much chance for open transition as there is at Dortmund. So I think Southgate is naturally reticent to sort of give a Dortmund player or give a Bundesliga player at all a go. I think Bellingham will make every squad because he's that talented. But I think until he moves away from Dortmund to likely a Premier League club, I don't think we'll see him get his way into the team, even though I think he would be perfect, really, in a midfield three. In a midfield two, even in a midfield two, actually, you know what we're saying? We're saying midfield two, we've got Declan Rice in midfield two, fantastic. Phillips, maybe you don't see the best of him necessarily in a midfield two. Put Bellingham in there. Bellingham and Rice, that could be fantastic. Bellingham has, like Rice, this ability to drive the ball forward, carry it, to win the ball, to defend as well. He can pass too. He's not a bad passer. So I think that would be great. You might lose a little bit. Well, you would lose a little bit of Calvin Phillips' perceptive passing, but you'd make up for it with a much more dynamic attacking potential from both of your pivots then.
Yeah, I really like that idea. My only issue with it would be is just those centre-backs, I don't know if they can be trusted without that level of protection that I think they need. Looking at Harry Maguire, John Stones, I think they need that little bit of protection in front of them, particularly at international level. I just don't think England's centre-backs and defence is quite there yet to be able to have a midfield that's that expansive and that attacking, as exciting and, I think, threatening as that could be.
It just depends on Maguire's form, right? Because Maguire's start season is rubbish right now, for instance. Absolutely atrocious. But then he started last season the same sort of way. By the end of the season and by the summer, he was fantastic. He was flying. Looked like a proper world-class centre-back. So obviously it depends. The worry for England, of course, is that the World Cup is now coming in November instead of May. So maybe he won't be ready. You know, Harry Kane will be in good form. He'll still be fit then. But, you know, poor Maguire might still be warming up for the season. And then, you know, then the big tournament comes. Oops. Maybe we don't get Mustang Maguire at the World Cup because of that. But yeah, and with Stones, I would agree 100%. And Walker, even for England. Walker's Walker's really good for City. He's not so good for England. But, you know, the right back is a whole other... That's a whole other podcast.
Somebody needs to get Harry Maguire a calendar quickly for Christmas. Get him a calendar so he's up to date before we go any further. Kaya, we've talked about who you'd probably file under the main names that are going to be in this conversation for Southgate's midfield moving forward. But as we all know, cliched as it is, there's normally a bit of a wild card that does get thrown into it. So there are other names that are potential options. So we've just picked out some who've impressed so far in the Premier League this season. Curtis Jones at Liverpool. No English player has provided more Champions League assists since the start of last season. 7 games in Europe, 4 assists and a goal. He's probably on the edge of things. Oliver Skip, bit of a scrapper in the Spurs midfield. Top tackler for Spurs and top tackler for Norwich when he was with them last season. And then Joe Willock, obviously was fantastic. Back end of season with Newcastle. Got his move there this summer. A little bit of uncertainty, but you'd look at the situation with Eddie Howe. You'd reckon Eddie Howe fancies him as a key player. And then Harvey Elliott is going to be out for a few months with that nasty injury. But raw talent, Jurgen Klopp loves him. He throws him straight into the starting 11. When you look at those names, and you know, we could be here all day listing off other players, who do you see as maybe a bit of someone that we haven't seen coming in the rearview mirror that could force their way into the 23?
So I'll start with, of the players you mentioned there, I'll start with Willock because he's the one who I know best. And I'd say I don't think he has the quality quite to get in this England side. I think if you're going to play midfield, particularly international level, you need to be really good at passing. You need to be good on the ball. And Joe Willock just isn't at that level. He's not a great passer. He's great at getting into the box. He's great at scoring. And we all saw towards the end of last season where he really hit that purple patch when he's in his zone and he can get on the end of crosses that come into the box or feed off bits and pieces. Yeah, that's your guy, but I don't think you can really take up a place in the squad on the off chance. A chance like that might come, and then Joe Willock probably won't be starting games, so it'll be last 10, 15 minute kind of player. I think there's better options for England. Curtis Jones is probably the one who I look at the most. I think he needs to really be playing week in, week out for Liverpool. It's difficult because Klopp changes midfield so often, so it's really difficult to nail down a regular starting place for Liverpool. But I think, yeah, in terms of what he can offer, is we talked about what Gallagher offers in terms of an attacking threat and what Bellingham offers in terms of an attacking threat. I think Curtis Jones offers that equally. But again, sort of ball recoveries, tackles, that's where I think he just struggles a little bit. If he can improve on that, and I think working at Liverpool with Klopp, he will get better at that just because of the way they play and what they ask the midfielders to do in terms of the press. I think he can get better, and I think he's someone who I would keep an eye on most of those names you mentioned there. But I think we've covered them pretty well. I think we've done quite a good job of covering the options, to be honest. I don't think there's that many names, unless some kid comes out of nowhere by the start of next season that we've never heard of, which of course can happen. But unless that happens, I don't really think there's too many names really banging on the door, apart from obviously the ones we've covered in a bit more depth so far in this pod.
Yeah, I think Harvey Elliott is the one that you would say is like a sensational kind of talent. He looked like a different class. Like Willock is good, Jones is good. There's one or two things about each of them that's good. Like Willock is goal scoring, with Jones it's his mentality. He's not afraid of anything. But you know, both of them probably just a bit lacking in terms of quality, right? Like they're not quite there. Elliott looks very special, but that's a bad injury, right? That's going to be a year out, and then another year trying to get back to his previous level. So in 2 years, maybe we can talk about Elliott again, which is a real shame because he looked special last year in the Championship, and he looked great to start this season as well with Liverpool. And I think he was in for a very big campaign, despite only being 18 years old. And it's a real heartbreaking injury. He'll get back. He'll get better, but he'll lose a year for sure to the injury, and then another year he won't be at the kind of level he'll want to be at to get into the England team. It'll take him another year to get really. It takes about 2 years to recover from those kind of injuries. So, you know, we'll see in 2 years, maybe for the next Euros, Elliott could be in contention. He's very special, though. So he's the one I keep an eye on out of them. The rest of them, I think, as Kai said, we've covered them, man. There's so many options, but we've been over them all. And what the only thing that matters really going forward is Southgate, which system is Southgate going to pick, right? Which 4-2-3-1 is the answer. We know that already. We don't have to speculate. So then pick your players that will do well in that. I still think Calvin Phillips in a 4-2-3-1, you're almost wasting your time with him. He's good at it. He can do it, obviously. But you want someone you want to build something for the future that's going to be able to be expansive and be a bit different, right? Now, sure, you could argue with Rice's newfound attacking drive, maybe he'll be a bit more attacking, but I don't think he will, because I think for England, the way he intercepts the ball, I think, is something, as Guy said, John Stones is very weak against that sort of thing. Maguire's not playing too well right now. I think you want to have Rice back there protecting those two, right? So you need your other midfielders to be, because Phillips is the passer of the two. You want some, maybe you want someone that can move forward a bit. That's what I'm saying. Jude Bellingham, maybe. Maybe even take a real risk and put Mason Mount a lot deeper. Maybe that could work. I mean, I'm not saying you should do that, but maybe that's something you could try out. Just try something different, because Phillips and Rice is good. It's good. It can get you with a generous draw, can get you quite far. But if you're playing the very best of the best every time so far, it's come out short. Let's try and expand. Let's try and be a bit more expansive. Let's try something like a bit more of a risk, like you did in 2018, like you did against Spain in the Nations League in 2019, when you played a diamond and you had Rashford and Sterling and Kane as a false nine. That was great. Take more risks like that, Gareth. Come on. You've got so much talent in the team. You can really do something. Take a risk.
Right, we've kind of looked at this and we know how Southgate's going to go. So to wrap up, I'm going to throw it over to you each. Kaya, we're going to go to you first. 2022, the first game at the World Cup. Forget about what Southgate is going to do. We know he probably is going to err on the side of caution. What do you do? Who is your midfield for that first game in Qatar?
My midfield is, I think it's, for me, Rice and Bellingham. I think that would be really exciting and I'd love to see it. Let's say England get a nice easy draw for that first game. I think it could be really exciting just because they both offer so much. You'd obviously have to ask Rice to restrict himself a little bit just to cover a bit more for what Bellingham does. But I don't know whether it quite works with the two they have at centre-back now. I've got a sneaky suspicion maybe Ben White will be pushing for the back four by then. So that might make things a bit better. But Rice and Bellingham is the midfield two. That's what I would go for just because, yeah, I think it's the most exciting option.
Calvin Phillips holding midfield, Jude Bellingham, Conor Gallagher. That's my midfield three. 4-3-3, open the World Cup. Aaron Ramsdale at the back, just lasering the ball all over the field and also not having tiny Tyrannosaurus Rex arms. You know, Maguire and, I mean, yeah, sure, Ben White. Anyone but John Stones, man. I don't care. Anyone. Joe Gomez. Let's say Joe Gomez is fit. Put Joe Gomez there. I don't care. Anyone. Lukey Shaw, Trent Alexander-Arnold, of course. Come on, just go full 4-3-3, dominate the ball. You know, Gareth Guardiola, why the hell not, you know?
Gareth Guardiola. I'm going to get that bit clipped up and attached to your name just so we can get you saying, completely out of context, Gareth Guardiola, Mo. So thanks for that. Thanks for that little tidbit to wrap up the podcast. That's all for this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. Gareth, you've got a galaxy of stars to play in midfield. So please, please don't get it wrong in Qatar. We're going to call it there. Mo, Kaya, as always, thanks so much for your time.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Brilliant stuff, guys. Thank you. And as always, if you click subscribe on this episode of the podcast, you can get access to a brand new one every single week. We'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.